everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks, engineering and producing the show. Tom, I think we can call today showery. We had a really strong shower here about 40 minutes ago, and now the sun is out.
Well, apparently it's going to be like that. It's going to be rainy in places, and possibly the Weather Forecast Center is saying a thunderstorm this afternoon. We'll see.
Some folks heard a big thunder boomer during the night. Luckily, if there was one, I slept through it. I must have been pretty tired. The Buckmaster Show on the Bustos Media campus. Bustos Media now has 5 radio stations here under one roof. We are in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio, and our radio station is 1030 KVOI, The Voice, Tucson's only source for live local news and talk. It is the second day of February. Punxsutawney Phil on Groundhog's Day did see his shadow, which means spring will come a little earlier. At least that's the way I interpret it. We are now in year 14. It's the 14th year of our radio program and 36th year in the Tucson broadcast scene for years truly. We have our worldwide live listening and all of our podcasts going back 13 years of content at buckmastershow.com. Our live line for our telephone interview is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Some of our media partners we want to acknowledge every Friday include Green Valley News and Saharita Sun, the editor of those two fine newspapers, is with me in studio, Dan Scheer. Dan, as always, thank you for your support over the years, not only with my 13-plus years on the radio, but many years on Arizona Illustrated on the TV show on our Friday evening roundtable.
Yes, and I much prefer the radio. Thanks.
Yeah, we had to go through all that makeup deal, and then when they went to digital, oh my, every little blemish, every hair out of place. All right, Dylan Smith, thanks to Dylan, TucsonSentinel.com, Tucson Local Media Group supports us, which includes Tucson Inside Tucson Business, Tucson Weekly, Oro Valley Explorer, Marana News, Foothills News, and Desert Times. Our Friday Focus interview, and we try to bring in Laura every quarter to the Buckmaster Show because she has a lot to say. She has an important office. She's the Pima County Attorney, a Democrat who was elected. She's in the fourth year of a 4-year term, and she has announced that she will seek and stand for a second 4-year term. That election, of course, is, the primary is in August, then the general election in November. Laura, good to see you.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm always glad to be here, Bill.
You know, there is, as I mentioned, you do have an opponent. Mr. Jett is his name, Mike Jett, a former, I believe, federal prosecutor. And he says that victims and law enforcement are disappointed with your charging decisions. When you hear something like that, what do you think?
Well, I think in all fairness, Bill, I know the gentleman, so I should clarify that I think it's pronounced Jetty.
Dan told me that right before he went on the air.
Well,
now,
that's
isn't
the
that something?
Thing
there
to
you
do.
Go.
Yep.
I got Punxsutawney Phil correct, and then with Mr. Jetty, J-E-T-T-E, I mispronounced it. But go ahead, Laura.
We're helping him with his name ID. I'm the most gracious opponent that there will ever be. And I want the listeners to know that I'm checking my watch right now because it's 12:08. It's the lunch hour, which allows me to talk politics for a little bit because I'm extremely strict about that.
Yeah, because you're on your own time.
That's right.
Right.
Now. That's yes. Right. I'm eating lunch in my head.
Yeah.
But to get to your question, right, we have a candidate that's launched. It's very vague. It's very ugly. That's okay. When they go high, when they go low, we go high, as the saying goes. I'm going to stay squarely focused on the incredible work of the office, and I'm going to run for office just as I did last time, all over the county, making sure that I'm listening and informed and answering concerns. And it's healthy for democracy. So here we go.
And one of your supporters, her name is Allison, I won't use her last name, a Midtown resident, had a letter to the editor in the Star just this week in your defense, saying that you, when you started your job, you started the job, according to Allison, behind the eight ball, inheriting a large backlog of homicides.
It was quite the interesting time. What we walked into needed a heck of a lot of help, and the world was hurting. It was the height of COVID. It was before vaccine. We were in a harsh homicide and domestic violence spike, and we had got the agency had gotten way behind on a homicide backlog. And we dug in. We are completely caught up on the homicide backlog. Last Friday, Chief of Police Chad Kazmar was here, and I applaud him. He is right to point out the incredible data. His city data is wonderful. I'm countywide, of course. So countywide, I'm here to tell you that we're 36% down on homicides from 2 years ago and 39% down on robbery from 2 years ago. And that's outperforming the state and the nation. And that data is really, really important because false data that's just fear-mongering and saying that violent crime is spiking when we all know it's marvelously down, it has to be combated, you know, and that I think that sparked a lot of attention in the media that the truth is that violent crime is down. TPD and all of law enforcement need to be applauded. Our incredible homicide prosecutors need to be applauded, and we just got to stick to the facts.
All right, let's bring in my friend Dan Scheer of the Green Valley News.
Since we're on that subject, what about nonviolent crimes? What is not going in the right direction?
Well, as we all know, fentanyl use and related nonviolent low-level crimes persist. They cause quality of life concerns. And so what I love about the speed at which the criminal justice system moves is that you've got to be nimble and you've got to shift priorities. So that huge dip in violent crime allows us to take that time and treasure that we were so focused on violent crime in the 2 years and quickly and nimbly move straight into property and neighborhood concerns, small business concerns. And that's exactly what we're doing. Last year alone, we prosecuted 92% of what came in on theft and organized retail theft. That's a very, very alarming number because the charging rate should hover at about 50%, and it usually does. And so my concern as Southern Arizona's top prosecutor is that I think that 92% number means we're only seeing about half of what's actually out there. I've got to keep pushing people to not get discouraged. They need to call. They need to report. If they don't report, law enforcement can't even get the chance to go and take a look. And if law enforcement doesn't go out, I never get a file at all. So we've got to encourage people to keep calling and keep reporting these quality of life concerns.
So then, are you saying though then those crimes are up?
No, I think it's persisting. I think it's stagnant. I think all of what started in 2020, right at the time of COVID, is stagnant. We're certainly seeing some areas of improvement that are fantastic. I mean, in the area of housing, the number of I think it's like 600 families are now permanently housed through the Housing First program at the city. And I want to point out too that, because I'm county attorney rather than a municipal DA, we've got metro government going on. We've got the county and the city talking to each other, meeting face to face and talking homelessness, fentanyl, quality of life all the time, which puts us a step ahead, I think, of other cities.
Dan, I know you wanted to follow up on the homeless piece, but I want to go back to the, go ahead, Laura. No, you can have a sip of water while I craft this question, and it has to do with the shoplifters, which is a huge problem. We had someone Monday, Zach Yenser, actually, who used to do a radio show here, is now the vice president of the Metro Chamber. He was with me on my Monday one-on-one, and he was talking about that they did a listening tour of all five of the supervisorial districts here, and at the top of the list for business owners is the shoplifting crime. And I know you're a little bit at odds with your counterpart up in Phoenix in Maricopa County, who would like to see stronger laws against repeat shoplifters. But from what I understand, you feel we already have enough on the books to go after these people. Is that correct?
So this is interesting. It talks about, again, the system needing to be nimble, right? 4 years ago when I first ran, fraud and scam was the top property-related issue that we heard every single day. And I know Dan down in Green Valley and Sawarita would agree. We built the first fraud unit in 20 years, and now we are focusing that talent and resources right squarely on these repeat shoplifters and repetitive what's called organized retail theft. Where I disagree with some folks is that we need to get at those who are profiting and exploiting the situation, and we do down here. We have smart investigations that go after the people who are fencing the stolen goods, profiting off of it, and making sure that we're getting smart, data-oriented results. If we're talking about legislation that takes someone who with substance use disorder, mental health, and they're going in and making low-level thefts, and we say we should do 4 years in prison instead of two, I just don't know that we get anything from that other than spending, again, the most amount of taxpayer money that we could to put someone into a place where there's absolutely no treatment. So they come out 4 years later instead of two, worse off, and we're right back where we started. Until we get serious about substance use disorder and mental health, we're not getting at the root cause, and that's what we need to be doing.
Dan, well, sure.
You say low level thefts. However, this is costing the stores an awful lot of money as far as security and employees, and it's costing, every time something walks out the door without being paid for, it's going to cost me more. So these things are actually affecting an awful lot of us. So you are talking about the person, it's a low-level thief, I get it, a petty thief, but altogether, this is a huge issue, and this new House bill simply would go after retail theft by imposing tougher sentences on repeat offenders. So isn't that at least one piece of the puzzle?
Well, first of all, you're absolutely right that this is an extraordinary concern, but the distinction that's really important to make is that we already have organized retail theft. We already have fraud schemes, which is even more serious penalties. That's a class two that's higher than the class four. We already have that to go after the people who are fueling the thefts, right? If they can't sell what they're stealing, if they don't have the buyers and the distributors, those are who we have to go after. Now, when we talk about people who are repeatedly stealing, that goes back to my 92%. We're building felony cases against them. If you're a person accused of repetitive theft, we're building felony cases against you and holding you accountable. And what's more, and I think more important, is that we teach and teach and teach that we want to know about aggressive behavior. If someone comes in and steals bread and peanut butter and runs back out, that's one issue. If someone comes in and is stealing alcohol, stealing perfume, etc., and they're told to leave and instead they lunge aggressively back at the employee, that behavior is the target behavior. And no matter what they've taken, even if it is just bread, we're going to go after them for that aggressive behavior.
However, we have a case of repetitive theft in Sawarita that you're aware of, and you have decided not to prosecute it. It was a corrections officer who actually stole from Walmart that we know of, 23 times accused of that. And I know that those are misdemeanors, but you opted not to prosecute, which, I will be honest with you, it raised a lot of eyebrows in our community.
And I understand that. So the first part that we absolutely have to clarify is that it is not that he's not getting prosecuted. We declined to build 23 cases into a felony when he can be handled in your court in Sawarita and held accountable at the misdemeanor level. And there were two parts that came into play. One is this is a first-time offense situation. There's no criminal history to our knowledge. And so that's the first look at it. And so he's in that category. The second look at it is that because this was like $480 of theft, it's less than half of the felony marker of $1,000. We have to stretch that into building 23 separate cases against him to call it a scheme. And I'm not dismissing the corporate victim here, but I've got to look at a corporate victim, and then I've got to look at 23 losses of individual homeowners, you know, 23, you know, times that a child's bike is stolen. And with our limited resources, you know, me building 23 cases to stretch this guy into a felony is not an appropriate use of resources when I've got some 2,700 other victims waiting for relief.
But when you're looking at a case like this, does it come into play that he is a corrections officer and that we hold these people to a higher standard, or does that not come into play?
It is absolutely a concern, and I think if we didn't have a way to hold him accountable in court in Sahuarita, that may have tipped it back over the edge. But there was an appropriate court to treat this first-time situation and to hold him accountable. And of course, as always, if more information comes to light, we're going to look at it. But no, it's extraordinarily important. Pima County families are trusting that staff, corrections officer staff, with the very lives of their family members. That is a top level concern as well.
All right, Dan, we're going to take a break right here and talk about Mona's Danish Bakery. And there is breaking news concerning Mona's. They do have the liquor license, and they are serving now wine. They've got beer, a little bit of champagne with your orange juice for your mimosa. So Mona's has stepped up their game. Mona's Danish Bakery, northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. It's going to be a fun time for sure this weekend. It's up at Mona's. Their website's monasdanishbakery.com. Steve, the wonderful owner, and his team, Steve sent me an email and said, tell all the listeners there is the liquor license is being fully utilized. So there you go. Check it out. All right. We'll take a break right here. It's Buckmaster on a Friday with Pima County Attorney Laura Conover and Dan Scheer. Be right back.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is finalizing a new 20-year plan for RTA board review and approval to seek public feedback on the draft plan. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com. The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things, Zocalo Village Studio. We do our telephone interviews. That's presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. But right now we are not on the telephone. We are live with Laura Conover, who is with me in studio, Pima County Attorney. And Dan Scheer is here, editor of the Green Valley News and the Saharitza Sun, and the editorial director, as if he didn't have enough responsibility with his two newspapers. He's the editorial director of nearly three dozen newspapers in 14 states owned by Sierra Vista-based WIC Communications. So folks can imagine just the personnel trying to deal with all these people and trying to get enough younger people to come into the business to work at a newspaper up in Pierre. In Pierre.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Notice I pronounced it correctly.
You did, Pierre, South Dakota. Yeah.
I mean, it's a challenge, right, Dan?
It is a challenge in recruiting, but it's across every industry. And you and I talked about this actually before the show, with fire and police, and maybe we'll talk more about it later. But to recruit people to these things, because there are so many more options for young people. Plus, you know, you and I are dinosaurs in that we went into this career and we've stuck with it for decades. It's rare to see that.
Many decades for me. 1967, I was an intern in the summer in Chicago at WIND Wind in that was a long time ago. But anyway, it's like I didn't get off the bus yesterday, Laura Conover. I've been around. And speaking of recruiting, how are things going in your office?
Well, just as Dan just mentioned, it is a concern across so many industries. I think law enforcement has been hit a little bit harder than the law agencies, but it's been very, very hard for us as well. Look, we're litigators, so we don't have the kind of ability to offer the remote work or work from home telecommuting as much as law firms can, where you can work from home full time. So, but we try to build excitement into that as well, right? It's the law and order of it all. And the excitement is still there. We're in the middle of, like, February is the big recruitment season. So
why is that?
They're getting ready. Some of them are taking the February bar exam. Oh. Others will take it in the summer. And so the summer is a big, summer intern law clerk program, and then fall you can start in as a first-year attorney. So just yesterday we had 38 applications come in from the University of Arizona, Bear Down, and next week we'll also be traveling up to the other school.
So these are young attorneys that want to perhaps come to work for you guys?
They're law students. They want to be here this summer as summer law clerks, which is a fantastic intern program. Mm-hmm. And then they'll grow in to be first-year attorneys and so on and so forth. And so that kind of excitement really adds a lot of inspiration into the building.
But the full-time attorneys, how is that going right now in the office? What is your staffing situation like?
It's better than it has been. I should mention, first of all, that the civil law firm, which of course represents all civil departments, we're the legal advisor to the Board of Supervisors, we're the legal advisor to the county administrator, they've been full now for well over a year.
The civil side of the business.
The civil law firm, exactly, okay. In the Pima County Attorney's Office. Mm-hmm. On criminal, that's where the really difficult, high-stress work is. So the criminal side's always going to have some turnover and some burnout, but we're feeling really good about where we are and where we're going.
Okay, Dan, sure.
So if we were to look at the hard numbers, how many prosecutors did you have when you started, and how many do you have now, and is that a fair question?
Well, I don't have that number memorized right off the top of my head, and I can certainly explain why. When we came in, there was a lot of turnover in 2020, I think simply because of COVID and because it wasn't clear who was going to be the next county attorney. So they were quite short when I came in. And as I've said, I didn't do a mass firing like a lot of DAs do. I didn't want to do that. I'm not a burn it down and build it back up. But we made very clear what our core values were going to be. We'd made it very clear on the campaign. Pima County voted, frankly, overwhelmingly for it. And we came in and then we held those promises that we were going to have smart justice and data-driven justice. That caused those who were very tied to the former administration, to tough on crime, war on drugs.
Almost a quarter of a century.
Yeah.
And then Barbara LaWalle, and then her disciples go right back, the lineage to a gentleman by the name of Steve Neely.
Yeah.
So when that, you're talking a certain culture.
Oh, absolutely.
Legal culture. 40-some
44
years.
And that's a long time to have one kind of system of justice. It was a huge culture change. So those who were deeply tied to the administration moved on. I always like to say they were free to leave. They were not detained. They were free to go. They moved on. And the best part, Bill, that, you know, negative news, so to speak, travels quickly. I'd like for the positive news to be out there as well, because we had a fall season where we had 9 attorneys who had left many, many years ago for all the right reasons, come back for all the right reasons. And among those 9, it was 117 years of felony trial experience. It's just extraordinary. I mean, think of this.
People never hear about that.
No, of course not.
People came back.
It's
9,
good news.
You're talking 9 people.
Yeah.
And with a cumulative legal experience,
right,
of
117 years of felony trial experience. And 2 weeks ago, retired Court of Appeals Judge Bill Brammer joined us to come build our appeals unit, to train brand new attorneys, improve their writing, improve their courtroom skills. It's an absolute coup to get someone like that in the building.
I remember Bill Brammer. He's been around a long time in our legal system.
Yes. Yeah. You can't, it's priceless, that kind of experience that just walked in the door. It's very exciting.
But you use the term tough on crime as if it's a bad thing. And this really is kind of the rap on you, is that rehabilitation instead of incarceration. Can't we do a little of everything?
So what you need, Dan, are data-driven policies and to be solution-oriented. And so the problem with tough on crime and the war on drugs is that we had decades of spending the most amount of money and getting the least results possible. So what we teach instead is what's called the ongoing threat of harm. And it's like a 26-factor. I'm not going to get into it right now. It's a 26-factor analysis that we teach. We teach it when you're asking a judge to detain someone that very first day of arrest. We teach it when you're looking at if you might offer a plea agreement, what you might say at sentencing and argument. And so when we're talking about violent victim crime, this is not a good place for you. We are holding you very accountable. If you have taken a life, if you have pointed a gun at someone and pulled the trigger, you are going away for as long as is necessary. What we need to do, on the other hand, is be smart with every taxpayer dollar when we're talking about substance use disorder and mental health. When I came in, Dan, a third of all felony convictions in 2019 were simple drug possession or even paraphernalia. That couldn't be more expensive and more wasted. And I don't think the community is going to want to go back to that. They're going to want to go forward.
People think, generally the perception is, that Laura, you and your team run the Pima County Jail.
That is an unfortunate concept. And I'm happy to repeat as many times as possible. I do not run the Pima County Jail. And what's more, I have zero authority over the Pima County Jail. Why? Because we got to remember I'm the county attorney, not a DA, which means that, yes, I wear the prosecutor hat, but I'm also the county's attorney representing the county. And so that means I literally am prohibited from having any authority over the jail. Any oversight comes from other natural sources in the state and at the feds. And that's where oversight is. And that it's a really important distinction.
Do you have any opinion about this Blue Ribbon group has come out now with findings? There are two recommendations. One of them would be to build a new jail at a price tag, I believe the figure is $600 million, or some combination of a little bit of an upgrade, keep the existing bones, but then do a lot of remodeling. Do you have any personal opinion on the jail and it as a facility?
Well, there's no doubt that the building itself, from what I hear from county facilities, needs attention. I think, frankly, most of our county buildings need attention. That's an issue countywide. I know our building is very special. And so there's no doubt about that. But when I take a look at who is in the jail, who should probably be in a hospital and not the jail, and I think about that segment of the population, and I think about those concerns, I think I'm gonna continue to say that we need to have a jail where people who are held, who are an ongoing threat of harm, going right back to that phrase, who have to take a time out. That's what jail is for. And if we continue to detain people for no reason other than they can't pay that low cash bond, we're going to continue to see the same problems because they should be hospitalized and not in a jail facility. And look, again, how do we be as smart as possible with the taxpayer dollar? And what we've done as a state is we've built prisons instead of educating our kids. That's the truth. And again, until we start investing in children and in prevention, we're not going to get the result we want as a community. We have to be upfront about our taxpayer dollars.
Here's Dan Scheer.
The weather's nice in Arizona this time of year, and our homeless camps are filling up, and with that, tons of crime. How are you dealing with homeless camp crime, and have your tactics changed in light of the growing homeless population?
So obviously, when it comes to these encampments, the first line of defense, if you will, if there's criminal activity going on, is law enforcement, and it's generally city government, right? And so I definitely want to direct our listeners to the encampment protocol. It's really important
you're talking about the tier system.
There's a tier system.
1, 2, and 3.
It's probably right on the city of Tucson's website. We're grabbing it right now.
Yeah.
But it's a tier system.
Mm-hmm.
And you get, as I understand it, we're getting a quick response when it's reported that there's criminal activity going on in the encampment, right? There's three different tiers of categories there. And encampment protocol and reporting tool at tucsonaz.gov. And again, that gets back to, right, we've got to encourage people to report. If you don't report, police don't know. If police don't know, I never get a file. But to your question, Dan, what law enforcement are seeing, because I do my summer of police ride-alongs every summer, and what I'm hearing is the presence of firearms, the violent crime that can occur in these encampments, that's a change. What I hear from veteran sergeants, right? That's not what they saw years ago in these encampments. And again, absolutely not tolerated. Absolutely not tolerated. They are very seriously investigated, and it's very hard to find eyewitnesses who are willing to talk. But you know, TPD has an 89.6 solve rate. That is so high nationwide on homicides. And we hold those people, we make sure those victims get justice just as if, because it's just as if it's someone's sister or daughter or child, right? it doesn't matter that there's not a victim family in the room. We are gonna make sure that they get justice regardless.
All right, let's go to the live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Mo has a question for Laura Conover. Go ahead, Mo.
Hi. You know, I'm the chair of the Coalition Against Retail Theft here with the Tucson Metro Chamber. Mm-hmm. I also operate a business. Laura, I think we've interacted before. And I'm trying to figure out what you plan on doing about the fact that you have so many prosecutors leaving and having to hire outside counsel. What's the dollar amount that's going to outside counsel versus, you know, the internal team that you have?
Mr. Osnani, thank you for your question. You may have missed it a little bit earlier, but we were talking about how it's been well over a year since our civil law firm has been fully staffed. When we first came in, it was tough. We had to lean on other law firms to take some cases to defend the county when we first came in. But our civil law firm has been full. It's run by Sam Brown, Civil Chief Deputy Sam Brown, and it's been full well over a year. We have 41 individuals, interested law students in that particular unit who want to clerk in the next coming 2 years. And so that practice has gone away, and we've been saving the county a fortune, of course, obviously, as we defend their interests.
Okay, Dan, do you have anything more before we let Laura Conover go about her day?
Just a quick word on fentanyl, because we all know it's an awful thing in our community. And what is your philosophy on handling the people who are selling it, using it, whose lives have been destroyed by it? And is your tactic working? How do you know if it is or isn't?
Well, we've taken a holistic approach. When we talk about an ongoing threat of harm, we've been the only county in the entire state of Arizona willing to prosecute homicide for an individual who knowingly sells fentanyl, profits off of it, knows that their product is dangerous, and leads directly to the death of their client, where fentanyl is the only product in their system. And so it's linked directly by the Office of the Medical Examiner to fentanyl toxicity. We have gone after those particular sellers for homicide charges, and we're the only ones in the state doing it because we think they're knowingly risking death and recklessly acting in the terms of manslaughter. And we've had a number of successful convictions on that. On the other far end, we worked with the health department to become a certified distributor of Narcan. And so we do that on nights and weekends. We had an award-winning, our first public service announcement that did really, really well, where I partnered with the chief and the sheriff talking about make the call and our Good Samaritan law, that the moment you see an overdose happening, make the call. You will not be charged with simple drug possession and trying to save someone's life. So you've got two opposite ends of the extreme. And when it comes to simple possession of fentanyl, we are moving everyone we can into our STEPS court and trying to immediately intervene with treatment to get as many people the intervention that they need as humanly possible.
The budget hearings will be coming up very soon. How does it look for your budget? I'm just about out of time. Quick answer, please.
Well, that state shortfall has everyone nervous, right? Mm-hmm. As predicted. And we may all be having to tighten our belts. But look, this administration, we're forged in fire. And we're going to rise to whatever occasion we have to.
Laura Conover, good to see you. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Bill. Thank you, Dan.
All right, we'll take a break right here. I've got a few things to bring up with Dan Scheer, so Dan will stick around. It's the Buckmaster Show on a Friday. We will be right back.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100. This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Family-owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
Whether you've considered an all-inclusive luxury cruise, an expedition adventure, or a relaxing river cruise, come to Bon Voyage Travel's annual showcase on March 3rd at the Hilton El Conquistador. Presentations will be offered throughout the day to provide you a chance to hear more about these travel brands and their exciting offers. Bill Buckmaster and I will be teaming up to present the travel trends of 2024. Visit bvtravel.com for more information on Bon Voyage Travel's free showcase on March 3rd.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Our thanks to Pima County Attorney Laura Conover. Our Friday Focus interview today. And with me in studio, Dan Scheer of the Green Valley News and Saharita Sun. Dan, there's an interesting story in your area about a gentleman who, shall we say, has been kind of blocking a well-known trail. It's called the Anza Trail.
Right,
in your area.
Yeah, the Anza Trail. Just,
and he's,
you know,
put up three fences.
He put up three fences, and here's the deal, is that the moral of the story is that when you buy a piece of property, read all the fine print, and sometimes you can actually own a piece of property that you don't control. So for him, the property goes all the way from the street all the way back to the pecan orchards, but it crosses the Santa Cruz River. And of course, you can't even look at the river askance without flood control getting in your face. So mm-hmm. you can't really do anything there, but he does own it. Mm-hmm. So, but there's an easement across the property for the Anza Trail that's been there for decades. He says that it is not valid, and therefore he put up three fences and finally, blocking hikers. And mm-hmm. the county came out one day, I happened to be there, and chopped them all down. He threw some branches on the trail, and he comes out and routinely yells at people. Put up another fence that just recently came down in the last few days because the county is trying to work with the guy on whether there's an easement. And really, what his frustration is, Bill, is not so much the hikers who stay on the trail; it's that it looks like no man's land, even though he owns it. Mm-hmm. And so there's been a lot of motorized vehicle, and they're just tearing up the land. And mm-hmm. so it was really a frustration thing. So
sure.
Here, the real question here is, and I have to give a big shout out to Kristen Randall at our Justice Court, Ray Carroll's court in Green Valley, who went in and basically started the mediation and got the ball rolling on this. So hopefully this can come to a peaceful conclusion. But read that fine print when you buy a piece of land, and you don't always control everything you own.
Mm-hmm. So the motorized vehicles would be on the trail itself, and they are not.
They're not
supposed to be mm-hmm. on the trail.
Not at all. But yeah. Again, you know, you have a guy's house, he has a back fence, but his property extends beyond that. but if you were walking across there, you wouldn't think it does. And so those motorized vehicles absolutely should not be on the Anza Trail.
We have so many animal welfare groups, and I'm so happy we do in Southern Arizona. Add another one, Dan Shear.
We had a dog out of Vail. It's kind of between Sarita and Vail, Corona de Tucson, that went missing. It was a huge mastiff, and it was gone for 3 weeks, lost 48 pounds.
Oh, my goodness.
About 30% of its body weight.
Oh, poor
thing. And was found, but the owners now have taken it upon themselves to be a chapter of a rescue group out of the Phoenix area, and I can't recall exactly the name of it, but what they do is, in situation like this, when a dog is missing, they go out and they help find it and rescue it. And I will tell you, the story that will be published later today online has a lot of interesting tips that really go contrary to the way we think about tracking down a lost animal. Mm-hmm. And just kind of these ways of making sure that they are ultimately safe. And so it was a really rough story during those 3 weeks the dog is missing, but now, weeks later, we see that something really, really good is coming out of it.
And I think it speaks well for our area that we do care about animals like we do. I mean, per capita, we may have more animal rescue groups than any other metropolitan area in the United States.
I tell you, when we do an animal story, we're gold, you know, and good, bad, whatever. People really appreciate the animal groups that we have in our area, and they are protective of them. And so we tell that story, and we love to.
Can I do a quick plug for the animal-based mosaic that will be going up at St. Philip's?
It's beautiful.
I wanted to do something in Anne's memory because Anne loved animals. So I commissioned, through the Santa Teresa Tile Works, wonderful organization, a panel, a mosaic that will be going in the plaza at St. Philip's in the Hills Episcopal Church. If people want to take a look at it, I mean, it's amazing what they were able to do with this mosaic. Go to Bill Buckmaster on Facebook, and there is a picture of the finished product that will be dedicated on St. Patrick's Day. So, thought I'd give a quick plug.
Yeah, fitting tribute.
All right, we'll take a break right here. Dan Gibson's coming along with Weekend Watch right after this.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com. The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation improvements in the region, averaging more than $100 million in tax revenue each year. The RTA is preparing a new 20-year plan for public review prior to a May 2025 election. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. And your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Time to cast off into Weekend Watch with Mr. Dan Gibson. Weekend Watch presented by our friends over in Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico, only about a three-hour drive from Tucson, a very pretty area of the Land of Enchantment. You've got the Gila National Wilderness right there, the world-famous Cliff Dwellings National Monument, and historic Silver City with all that wonderful Victorian architecture and some really good places to sample New Mexican cuisine, where the big question is, do you prefer red or green for your chili? All right, southwestnewmexico.org for more information about great places to visit, places to stay, and to dine as well. Speaking of dining and things to do, let's bring in the host of Weekend Watch, Mr. Dan Gibson. Hey, Dan, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Doing well. A little bit of rain, but it's going to clear up. It's going to be a great weekend. Any ideas for our listeners on things to do this weekend?
You know, it's funny you ask, because I did prepare some ideas. You know, You may have missed it. It had been dormant for a little bit, but the first Saturday Art Walk has been revitalized by the Warehouse Arts Management Organization downtown there, supporting Open. It's an art walk happening this Saturday, January 6th, from 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. It happens every month from then on. And you can tour a number of downtown galleries and other workspaces that will show you a little bit about what's happening in Tucson art. The event itself is free, which is great, but you can visit such places as Steinfeld Warehouse, Art Miss Gallery, the Snakebite Creation Space, which is new to me, Haunted Hands, where you can buy art and get a tattoo. So just something to consider. I don't know if you're done on tattoos for now, but if you're looking for one, Haunted Hands does a really nice job.
I enjoy body art on other people, but not on me, so.
Okay, well, there's still time.
There you go.
Did you happen to see in the New York Times the story about Linda Ronstadt's favorite things to do here in Tucson, Arizona?
Yes, I did. Do you want to share some of her favorite places with our listeners?
I mean, I certainly can. Great piece, and congrats to Visit Tucson's PR team for putting that together. And Abby Qualchuk is an incredible writer. But one of the things she did mention was, City Gastronomy, the Bordelandia tour, which just as a note, I don't think I've ever talked about Bordelandia here. It's a great organization that does tours of Tubac to Macaquery, Tucson. They're having a City of Gastronomy tour coming up. You go to their website, bordelandia.org, and it's a walking tour of downtown. You get to taste some of the flavors, cultural diversity that makes Tucson's food scene unique. Alex LaPierre, who does the tours with his wife, I believe, does an incredible job, and you've seen it everywhere. They mentioned, actually, I think, in the New York Times twice in the same week, the Borderland tours. So you probably want to book it before they all sell out at borderlandia.org.
So what were some of the favorites that Linda Ronstadt said she loves about the Old Pueblo?
The Desert Museum, she mentioned specifically that she used to go there as a kid when they'd have the Mountain Lion Mike, I don't remember. But anyway, that she grew up with that space. She mentioned Barrio Bread because, you know, if you're going to talk about Tucson anymore, you pretty much mentioned Barrio Bread as well. She mentioned the Temple of Music and Art, where she'd performed a number of times. It was funny because it mentioned as like being on the end of a dead end street. And I was like, is it? Oh, well, all right. Close enough. God, I guess. Is it? Memory is a funny thing, you know what I mean? What else was on there? It was a really nice piece.
Great publicity for Tucson in the New York Times. I could take another quick one, Dan.
Sure. I mean, if you're looking for something to do coming up on Saturday, February 3rd at 7:30 p.m., you can ask yourself the question, can you still rock in America? Well, it turns out Night Ranger says you can. They'll be performing their hits, including Sister Christian, Don't Tell Me You Love Me, When You Close Your Eyes.
the Night Ranger has sold over 17 million albums and performed on over 4,000 stages, and they will make the Fox Tucson Theater the next in that series. So should be a good time if you'll enjoy some 80s rock, Night Ranger style.
There you go.
Including most of the original members, so which is actually relatively notable these days.
All right, Dan Gibson, have a great weekend, Dan. Thank you, sir.
You too. See you at Night Ranger.
All right, Buckmaster Show. Presentation of Bill Buckmaster Communications, which is wholly responsible for the content of our program. Thanks to Tom Fairbanks and the entire team at KVOI and Bustos Media Tucson. All of us here have pretty much the same wish for all of you. Be safe. Have a great weekend.